fish heads, roly-poly fish heads, fish heads, fish heads, eat them up, yum. Fish heads, fish heads, roly-poly fish heads, fish heads, fish heads, eat them up, yum.
Hey, welcome back to Catch It, Cook It, and Eat It. I'm your host, Ben Sargent. Today we have some real special guests on the show. We're talking about one of my favorite programs in the city. It's called I Fish New York. You've probably seen their t-shirts and bumper stickers and wondered how you could possibly get your hands on one. And the answer to that is you can't unless you work for the program. The t-shirts are a coveted item in this city. I have mine and I'm not giving it up. I have Melissa Cohen, who is my boss from a few years back. Darren Albury from the Sea Grant program, and James McDonald, also from Sea Grant Fisheries. Thanks, guys, for coming on. And let's start this out by asking you what it is exactly I Fish New York is all about. What do you do, Melissa?
Well, the I Fish New York program teaches kids to fish in New York City. And also gives them aquatic education to go along with that. And the main objectives are to increase the angling population of New York City.
Okay.
And also
Pull that mic right up to your... There you go. Okay. We want to hear you loud and clear.
And also increase stewardship of our aquatic resources in New York City. So we go to schools in the five boroughs and we take kids fishing.
Okay. And these are kids that have some of them, as far as I know... have never even been to the ocean in some cases.
Right.
Right? So it's pretty fantastic that they get a rod, they get their bait, they get their a little intro, and then the next thing they know, if they're lucky, they have a fish on the end of their line.
Yes.
And you guys actually catch fish, is that right?
Oh, yes.
Yeah? Okay. Yeah. And Darren, you're a fanatic, right?
Oh, yes. I'm obsessed.
Okay. And so you take these kids out and... you know, show them a thing or two. What happens when, what are the age groups, first of all?
Well, we go from third grade and above. And it goes from that. We'll even go on, adults get to fish as well.
Okay.
You know, now you have to have a license before you fish, so that's complicated things little bit.
Right.
But now, we're getting a kid from inner city who's actually doesn't realize that East River's got some of the finest fishing in the world, if you're going to fish from shore. New York City's got some of the finest fishing in the bay if you're going to fish from shore. If you're a surf angler, there's not many finer places in the world. I mean, people talk about Long Island. It's internationally renowned for being one of the first surf capitals of the world.
Sure.
It's one of the reasons why I married my wife.
Right.
As you gather, I'm not local.
So she's from Long Island?
Yeah, she's from Long Island. Awesome. That's why I ended up here. So for me, it's been a learning curve.
Right, right.
Because I've fished all over Europe, Australia, and I've caught many, many different species.
Wow.
And you'll struggle to find a better fishery anywhere in the world by getting a pole in your hand and walking along a beach and catching fish.
And do these kids, I mean, would you say it changes their life when they have the experience of catching a fish?
It's... like I say to them, where else are you going to actually get your hands on something that's actually wild?
Mm-hmm.
You get something that's wild, you've handled it correctly, you can see it, you can say hello to it, and then you can return it.
Right.
And to see the kids' faces as soon as they catch that first fish, even if it's just a bluegill, the screams and they're jumping up and down, it's like, you can see they're ecstatic.
Yeah.
You know?
So you guys are all catch and release. That's one thing you're teaching the kids.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Exclusively.
Yeah.
And I mean, I would imagine that for the first time bringing up this, you know, wiggling, writhing fish, that some of the kids are a little squeamish. How do you teach them to handle the fish?
It's first thing we're going to is just educate them in a classroom before we actually get them to the side of the bank.
Okay.
There's some basic handling tactics. You must always wet your hands before you catch a fish, you're going to release it. Mm-hmm. A lot of experienced anglers don't do this.
Okay.
Just because they don't know. Right. A fish is covered in slime. The slime acts as an antibacterial agent. If you remove that slime from a fish, you increase its mortality rate when you return it.
Mm.
By washing your hands, you decrease its mortality rate. If you get this across to begin with,
yeah.
You know, you're creating an ethical angler.
Okay.
I like to think that I'm an ethical angler.
And do you think that, James, would you say that the guys, the kids who do this, would you say that their life has changed when they go out, you know, and experiences for the first time?
Probably depends on the kid. I don't know if their life has changed.
But
I mean, even beyond the fishing, they can have some really good experiences on our trip. I mean, a lot of them don't get out in the sky very often.
Right.
And this will A lot of times our environmental conservation officers will come with us on the trips.
Okay.
They're sort of DC police officers whose job is to enforce New York's environmental laws.
Which, believe it or not, folks, they're actually really nice people. They look really intimidating, and sometimes they wear their cop glasses, and they even have guns, but they are really nice people too, the DEC officers, right?
They are, and that's actually, and one of the great experiences they have is actually that some of these kids meeting a policeman who's nice.
Right.
You know, and like they help them fish, and he's not like being a jerk to them. And
right.
They get, I think that even of itself can be a really positive experience for them.
Do they ever snatch their rods away? Because there were a few times when I was fishing with the kids, and I could see, you know, a fish hit the water, and I couldn't resist. I'm like, give me that rod one second. Cast it out there. I'm like, I'll catch you a fish.
That's somebody been talking about me.
What's that? Yeah, well, that's what you do too, right?
It's happened by accident before.
Yeah.
I've thought one of their rods was snagged.
Okay.
And then it wasn't.
And then it wasn't. Do you, I mean, I remember times when we would bring in a fish and the kids would all be gathered around because it's exciting, you know, and sometimes you hear the line go out. And especially in the freshwater here, we pull up a fish and like the kids are like, what is it? What is it? And I remember Melissa and I would be looking at each other and be like, we have no idea. Like, what is that? Like, right? I mean, what, in those circumstances, it's not a native fish.
Is no, that... no. There's a lot. When we do fish surveys, too, we find fish that are from other places.
So how do they, like, how do they get there?
From people.
Okay.
Yeah. They could be people's pets. Right. Some people release animals to the environment because a part of religious practices. So
okay.
It could be for any reason.
Right.
Yeah.
So they're literally just dumping it into a foreign body of water, i.e. where?
Casino Lake,
Queens.
Harlem Mir, and Central Park.
Meanwhile, this tropical, bright-colored fish comes out, and you're like, we're like going through the handbook. We're like, I've never seen one of those before.
Yeah.
But it's cool. I mean, you guys also sometimes take the fish. I don't know if you're still doing this, but like, give the kids a second to look at the fish. If it's small, you can put it in a tank and give them, like, let them kind of watch it. Because it's, like, such a quick thing. You see it for a second, it goes back in. I think that's kind of cool, too.
Yeah, we sometimes bring the tank, right? We haven't put it in a while. We go through them because they're glass, and we make them every once in a while.
We don't always remember to bring it, either.
Yeah. Well, I have to say, it's a lot to remember. I mean, you've got tackle for 20 kids. You've got fishing rods for 20 kids. You've got bait. You've got, I mean, there's a lot of gear that comes along.
Yeah, well, we can actually fish it with, we usually fish up to 90 kids.
Whoa!
Yeah, in a day. Yeah.
Holy moly.
We'll fish with 30 at a time for an hour, then turn them around, have another class of 30, and then turn them around, have another class of 30.
Unbelievable.
And we've all still got his eyes. You know, it's quite a miracle, I'll tell you this.
That honestly, I mean, how that is even possible is remarkable. But I remember we did little demos where it was like how to hold your hook and how to not, you know, catch your friend and, you know, right, impale him. One thing that I always thought was amazing, it was the kid who was least interested in fishing, who was like kind of bored, was like looking off, was probably not doing what he was supposed to. And it was without fail that kid whose line would go, out it would go, and they're like, grab it, get it. What I thought was really cool is that kid would become the hero for the day. It would change his life in that sense, you know?
Yeah, it comes. If you can get one kid who actually remembers that experience, and realizes there's a resource on the doorstep with a little bit of equipment that's not going to cost a lot of money to do,
sure,
and they can go actually get out and go and do that,
right?
Yeah, you know, it stops them. Hopefully, if you get one kid out of every kid I've taught since I've been here, that chooses to do that instead of standing on the street corner getting into trouble, then I've achieved something.
Right. What do they think of your English accent, the kids?
It's brilliant. Not only do I look funny, I sound funny, so they just stand there. And I've just shaved the beard off.
Okay. Oh, wow.
I had the big beard for the winter. That helped a lot.
And then you're probably trying very hard to resist the temptation of telling them how that tastes best when you fry it up.
Yes.
What's kind of like the future of iFish New York? I'm curious what you guys have planned. And also, sorry, before we even go into that, you guys don't just do the fishing program. There's it's sort of like a twofold thing, right? What's the other half of what you guys do?
Well, within iFish New York, we also do public fishing clinics.
Mm-hmm.
And so we take members of the public fishing at all different areas in the city. Those usually saltwater. We just did a clinic for people with disabilities.
Okay.
2 years in a row now, and that went really well. So okay. We do other types of fishing clinics.
And there's this other piece that I'm getting at.
Oh, sorry, which that's is, not the piece.
It's one of my favorite phrases. It is, wait, hold on, let me see if I can get this right. It is invasive species eradication or something like that.
Well, we do fish.
It makes you guys sound really cool and like it's awesome.
Within the fisheries program, we do have Fish New York, but we also do fisheries surveys and fisheries work. And so part of the fisheries work is, the invasive species part.
Right. So, and explain to our listeners what exactly is an invasive species and what, I mean, what are the threats? Who's the fish to contend with these days?
Okay. Well, invasive species is something that's basically a non-native species, something that's not really supposed to be there.
Right.
Can be introduced by a variety of means. There's plants and all different kinds of animals that can be invasive species. But the one that you're getting to is the one you want to talk about. Is the northern snakehead, which is a fish.
The northern snakehead.
Known
for its nasty teeth and and what do they do? Why are they so bad?
It's not that they're bad where they are in New York City because they're not, or they could be bad. They're not supposed to be there. They're from another place. They're from another continent, from Asia. They're top predators, and so they're adapted to live there.
Is it true they attack humans?
We've found any instance where anyone's been attacked.
Okay. Is it true they walk on land?
We've never seen them actually walk. They kind of squirm on land, but honestly, we've seen eels do much better on land than snakeheads. Yeah.
Is it true they can breathe out of water?
They have to breathe out of water. They're obligate air breathers, so they actually have to breathe out of water. In fact, if you were to hold them underwater for a long time, it would drown. You would kill it.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, that's how the first three that we caught in a net that was completely submerged, and we had it there overnight. And when we went to get the fish the next day, the rest of the fish were fine except for one that was eaten by a turtle, but all the snakeheads were dead.
That's
all
incredible.
Three of them, yeah, because they couldn't come up for air.
But it's not a mammal.
It's not a mammal. they're definitely fish.
Right. So, and what, like, specifically, what are they going to do to a body of water if, you know, two are introduced to, you know, a lake or something, and they breed? What is the fear? What's going to happen?
I guess there's a potential that they, since they're good at reproduce several times a year.
Okay.
They have a lot of eggs. Both the male and the female guard the nest.
So fast multipliers. Voracious eaters.
Yeah, they like to eat a lot of stuff.
Strong and live above. I mean, it does sound like a monster what we're talking about here.
But they're really just, you know, adapted for other places. And I guess they have the potential to disrupt an ecosystem. So,
Okay. And not to be gruesome, but in that case, if you guys do pull one, have the kids ever pulled one up?
No, not yet.
No.
Okay.
What are you supposed to do with one if you get it? Not what are you guys supposed to do with it, but what is one supposed to do with it as a recreational fisherman?
In New York State, you're not supposed to have them alive.
Okay.
If anyone catches one, they're supposed to call the DEC office in their area. In New York City, they'd call our office.
Uh-huh.
And then keep the fish out of the water. They can live out of water for a couple days.
Okay.
And it's important to know that if you just leave them on the bank, they can find their way back into the water. So you want to put them somewhere. They're really good jumpers too, so you want to make sure there's like a cover on something that you put them in. Uh-huh. Call us, and then we would like to have the fish.
You would like to have
it
so that you guys can do a nice little Thai preparation and eat it back at the offices of the DEC. No, you freeze them, right? And study them.
Yeah, we can tell how old they are from their scales.
Okay.
Their scales on the outer side of their outer body. We can cut them open and see what they've been eating.
Okay.
So we can get data from them. So we've been saving them. We've got about 45 so far.
Whoa!
Out of Flushing Meadows, yeah.
Whoa, that's a lot.
It seems like a lot, yeah.
And I mean, if each of those are carrying eggs, then there could be a real potential for a problem, no?
We've been going back to Flushing Meadows every year, and we've been monitoring the other fish that are in the lake as well as the snakeheads, and we haven't seen for a couple years, right? 2 or 3 years, we haven't seen any big changes in catch per unit effort for either the snakeheads or the other fish.
Huh.
So maybe they are eventually going to have an effect on them. We probably just need to keep going out and getting data.
Okay. We're going to take a quick break. Listen up, those of you at home who are wondering if I was able to pull together a snakehead song. Yes, I was. I found a song called Snakeheads. We will be right back. Catch it, cook it, and eat it.
It's making me crazy.
We are back. Catch it, cook it, and eat it. And I am with the experts from the iFish New York program. These guys take kids fishing and introduce them to New York waterways and a whole new way of thinking about New York, I guess, is the best way to put it. Introducing kids to nature is pretty awesome, and that's kind of what you guys do. As well as snakehead eradication. I did just want to talk about this one story because it's kind of amazing. This was a few years ago. We went hunting for these things. I recall that I had some face paint on. I had smeared some mud on my face. I got really into this. And so we had done a little bit of what you have to do. It's a seine net that you use, right? To basically to go in and you're looking at a number of different types of fish.
Yeah.
Right.
It's a beach seine. I think it was like 100 feet or so.
100 feet of net that's out. So you put the net out. And then it's cool. It's an old way of catching fish, really. And then you start walking it to the shore and you gather it up. And as it gets tighter and tighter, you're trapping these fish. And I thought that the snakehead was a big myth at this point. You know, it was like, come on, we've never seen one. I've never even, like, this is ridiculous. But and actually, we weren't even catching many fish at all.
No,
at that
we were
part
having
of the,
not a lot of luck.
Not a lot of luck.
And it was 95 degrees outside.
Yeah, boiling heat. We have this flat bottom boat that's like right next to us, and we're probably in chest deep trying to pull this net together. And all of a sudden, one of these things jumps like 4 feet out of the water, straight out of the water, and miraculously lands in the bottom of the boat. And Melissa's like a very soft-spoken, lovely, lovely person, but you turned into a monster at that moment. Melissa's like, get that fish! Get that fish! And we like jump into the boat. There's like three of us tackling this fish, which I mean, they really do put up a fight.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing would not stop. And it's like thrashing and, you know, teeth and tails and whatever. And we finally get it into a cooler, right? And then even in the cooler, I remember it was just in there and it was knocking the top off the cooler. So I had to sit on top of the cooler.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
We'll electrofish with them. If you don't have the lid down,
the
lid, you know, actually electrofishing.
Explain electrofishing, because until I worked for you guys, I had no idea what that was. How does that work? Go ahead. Who's the electrofishing expert here amongst you guys?
Yeah. Electrofishing is basically using electrical current to temporarily stun fish that you can scoop up with nets and then put into a live well of the boat.
Yeah, it doesn't damage the fish.
Yeah.
It stuns the fish.
And you're measuring fish and you're basically looking at how healthy fish populations are in the areas, right?
Yeah, you can compare the different species. You can actually get size classes of fish because you take lengths and weights for all the fish. You can take scales from them. And
so you're putting an electric pulse into the water, is that right?
Yes.
I've seen it done with carp where they like go crazy.
It's pretty exciting. It's a lot of fun. We usually go at night.
What's it do? Does it stun them? Is that the idea?
It stuns the fish. It paralyzes. There's electric current goes through. It causes the muscles of the fish to spasm. And as they spasm, they float to the surface. And when they float to the surface, we scoop them in the net. Then we put them in an aerated live well.
Uh-huh.
And after a few minutes, the fish come back round. So the fish are not permanently damaged.
Right. Okay.
So we get to measure and weigh and take scales and age the fish. Then we turn the fish. And we get a limited amount of mortality, but very small.
Part.
Yeah.
Yeah. Huh. That's pretty awesome. How do you guys divide up the... I mean, there's three of you, but how many people are at the company now at this point?
In fisheries?
Yeah.
This is it, pretty much. We have two seasonals that work part-time in the office. Yeah.
And what are all of your, like, backgrounds? I'm just curious. Like, James, how did you come into to work for these guys?
I did my degree in marine ecology.
Okay.
And seeing as I'm a New Yorker and my wife has a, you know, really good job here.
Yeah.
There's not too many options for employment as a marine ecologist in New York City. So here I am.
Well, it's a pretty sweet job, I have to say.
I've been very, very happy with it.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And Darren, how did you come into the...
Well, I've got a bachelor's in environmental science.
Okay.
But I was a roadie for 20 years.
You what?
I was a roadie for 20 years.
Okay.
Then I moved to America
and
decided to try and use my degree. Moved to America to marry my wife.
Right.
And as a fisherman, I see a job advertised for teaching kids to fish.
A dream
come true. The week before, I actually found a job. Mm. A guy asked me, because I was struggling to find work, what would your dream job be?
Yeah.
I said, to teach kids to fish.
Really?
And it arrived there. Landed on my doorstep.
It's incredible.
Yeah, I worked part-time as a teacher in estuarine ecology in Oyster Bay.
Okay.
And then they put me onto this program that they were looking for somebody.
Okay.
And lucky enough, I got the job.
I have to comment just briefly that you're holding a model of a snakehead as though it were a rugby ball.
Yes, that's, you can see I'm not a soccer player.
2.5 foot snakehead that you look like you're about to like run through it.
Yeah,
it's awesome.
Yeah, I have had many a wrestling match with one of these. Yeah, they're very, very powerful fish.
They really are. And then Melissa, what was your background in coming into the program?
I have a background in marine science, and I worked for the DEC. Over 10 years, well, actually, like 15 years ago in the Tidal Wetlands program.
Yeah.
Went away, became a teacher, and now I have gotten to come back and teach kids to fish and do fisheries work.
Right, so right.
Feel and, really lucky.
And what's, like, what would you say the most rewarding part of the job is?
Well, probably my favorite part of the job is everybody I work with, because I work with really great people. And it's really rewarding to be thanked by the people that I am in touch with, you know, the kids and the teachers.
Do the kids ever reach out and say, you know, you really changed my life here. I love fishing now. Or do you think they ever take this back to, like, their parents? They come home and they're like, I want to go fishing now. Like, we went on a class trip and...
I would hope so, but I don't know.
I actually have... we've got some proof that does happen.
Okay.
Sort of, at least.
Okay.
Which is, earlier this year, we were at the Astoria Housing Community Center. It's pretty... grim-looking place. You know, it's a project, and it looks like one.
Sure.
We're waiting to start our program. As little girl comes out, sees Darren, kind of stands back, sizes him up a little bit. She's like, I know you. And we're like, how could we possibly know this girl? But she's like, you know Mr. I forgot what the teacher's name was.
Uh-huh.
We're like, wait a minute, we probably do know you. You know, what school do you go to?
Yeah.
And it was one of the schools that we'd visited, like, the previous year.
Way.
And she just kind of jumped on Darren and gave him this big hug. It was so cute.
That's so cool. And yeah, I mean, so do you think they get to go fishing after they've had this?
I'd like to think that we can give them some basic skills that they can go themselves.
Okay.
And if we go somewhere, we'd like to go somewhere local. We don't want to drag them too far away from the local area.
Which I think is the coolest thing about the program.
Yeah.
It's not like, hey, we're going to go take you out to outer Long Island, show you there's great fishing. Mm-hmm. It's like, we're going to do this in, you know, in the park.
Right.
Yeah.
It's so cool.
Yeah. It's like the Astoria project is like, this is just a set of housing, but it's right across from Roosevelt Island.
Uh-huh.
I look at the water and I know there's fish running through there at some point.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to carry on with them later on. I'll give them some basic fishing skills.
Okay.
Then when I've left, if they can get a cheap pole, they can go fishing and they'll know what to do.
Right.
Yeah, that's the objective, is to actually make anglers.
Mm-hmm.
Something they can go and do, either with their parent or with a little bit older, they can actually go and do it on their own.
Mm.
But the thing is just getting that initial fish, that a little bit of addiction.
The fishing bug.
You know? The obsession.
Yeah, which really, for some people, just takes that first tug on the end of your line.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I just thought of a really rewarding moment.
Yeah.
When a kid from one of the schools called me up in the office, like, days later and asked me how he could buy a fishing license.
Really?
Yeah, it was very exciting.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And let's talk about the license for a second. Is that something, I mean, I guess you guys sort of have to promote that, but, I mean, explain to me, because as a recreational fisherman, I'm still, after doing about 20 shows, trying to get to the bottom of this. Finally, I've got some DEC types here, people who could probably vouch for them. What is the point of the recreational license?
So, well, first, I'll talk real quick about freshwater fisheries license that we've had for a while. The fees for freshwater fisheries licenses go right back into the resource.
Okay.
So the conservation officers that you mentioned before, my work, or the you know, a lot of the work that the DEC does is funded directly by the license fees.
Oh.
So the marine recreational...
So I'm just putting food on your table.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it more than you know.
Well, I didn't get one, so there. Okay.
So, and then the marine license is the same idea, that it's going to go into the marine account.
Uh-huh.
And Darren, if you wanted to jump in and say something about it, I just want to mention that the federal government is implementing a federal register that everyone has to join who is fishing, you know, doing recreational marine fishing. So the state of New York had either the choice to implement their own license or else have whatever fees would be associated with the national registry go to the federal government.
Okay.
So basically, everyone in the country who's a recreational angler, who fishes in marine waters, needs to be on some form of registry. Oh. I'm a recreational angler, as you gather. You'll find me in Montauk in a nor'easterly stood on a rock, wearing a wetsuit, trying to survive. You know what I mean? But so I spend a lot of time fishing, and a lot. I suppose from a recreational angler's point of view, we're all guilty of taking something from a resource. So as a commercial guy goes, all the recreational anglers are taking this much fish. There's no evidence of what we're taking and what we're not taking.
Sure.
Okay. This will actually provide some form of statistical data that there's only so many recreational
how
anglers.
Many people are actually
out there, okay, how many that people makes are sense. Taking fish. So and it also gives the recreational angler, the first time for a marine recreational angler, an economic voice. Because we all have concerns about rules and regulations. Right. I take calls. I fish the party boats. You'll find me out of Point Laca, out of Cab Tree. A lot of guys know who I am, so I get hammered with the questions.
Yeah.
You know, why? You know, so you've got to, it actually gives as a recreational angler, if you think about it, we've actually got some say for a change.
But there's nothing that tells you how many fish.
No. At least you get an idea how many anglers they are to begin with.
Mm-hmm. Well, but I think part of it is that the contact information is provided. So if the National Marine Fisheries, I think it's National Marine Fisheries Service, needs to go and get this data, they have people to contact.
Yeah. And they weren't enforcing it last year, at least I didn't run into anybody, but is that going to start up this year?
I can't speak for how it's going to be enforced, how often.
Come on, Melissa,
when.
You know.
I really don't know.
Give it up. What's the fine?
I don't know what the fine. I do know that our conservation officers work really, really hard.
Yeah.
They're interested in preserving the resource, and they want people to have fun. They want people to go out fishing, and they're not going to. They use their judgment when they need to issue tickets for things. So.
And what? And something else. Well, as you have to talk to the DEC officers, the problem they have.
Yeah.
If somebody's there and they've got a bucket of short fish, say they got a bucket of short blackfish. Blackfish takes a long time to grow, so that's why we need rules and regulations for them. We don't have big fish, they're not going to produce the eggs and so forth. So the guy's there and he's got his $40 combination special from Walmart, and he's got, I've got
careful, I've got, that's what I fish with.
Yeah. he's got out there and he's like, I've got no ID.
Yeah.
Okay, so I can't buy it. All he can do is take his pole.
Right.
That's the only power that the DEC officers actually got to do until the license come in.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That's all they could do. The guy would be able to walk away. They just walk away with his pole and he's killed God knows how many fish.
So
and
I'll
how many
be
reasons.
Sure to only use my Walmart pole.
Yeah, use your only Walmart pole now. But now if you don't produce the license, it's another offence. So for the conscientious angler, such as myself, you know, it stays me having to walk down the beach and throw the short fish back in and get into, you know, a little bit of conversation with certain people.
Right.
But what I say is we're all guilty of exploiting the resource if we look after it. I mean, I can talk from experience. I'm from the northeast of England.
Yeah, where you have no fish.
Exactly.
Right.
But back in the 70s, my father used to fish from the beach, especially during the frost in the winter, and they'd bring about 70, 80 pound of cod from the beach.
Yep.
We used to that's how the fish were. And I watched it and it just fell.
Right.
And now there's no cod stocks left. There's not a breeding stock of population of cod who can remember where the spawning grounds are, and they will never, ever come back.
And that, in your opinion, is because there were no regulations?
Because the regulations were too slack. There were no regulations. They took too many fish in too short of a time, and it's disappeared.
Yeah.
And everybody can shout and bawl and moan or whatever, but that is fact. If we do not look after a resource, and remember, fisheries is a new science, if you look at science.
Right.
So maybe we're not getting it 100% right. Maybe, but we've got to err on the side of caution, because if you don't err on the side of caution, that's the consequences.
And as far as I understand, the sort of one of the assets, I guess, in having, you know, the program is that you're basically saying that it's important to have fishermen are eyes too. It's not just scientists. You really serve a purpose in maintaining, you know, fish stocks, and you need those people out there. Is that right?
Oh, absolutely. That's a really good point.
Okay.
Even freshwater fishery biologists get a lot of data from anglers, you know, recording their catches. So, yeah, they're really important.
And I think that's true on a commercial level too. You know, it's like sometimes the scientists will say, you know what? Like, we're not the experts here. Go out and ask the guys who are literally pulling fish out of the water every single day, because You know, so long as they're willing to be honest with you, which is debatable, the commercial fishermen know a lot, too. Mm-hmm. They see the fish every day.
I mean, where you run into trouble, though, is that the methodology of science and the methodology of fishing are very different. You know, fishing, you're like, I know where the fish are. I'm going to go get as many as I can.
Right.
You know, but whereas science, it has to follow a more, like, you know, particular and regimented pattern.
And the scientists don't get paid by how many fish they catch.
Yeah, the incentive system is very different.
Right, right.
So there can be conflict there.
Right, yeah. Guys, I'm going to have to cut you short. We're absolutely out of time, but this has been awesome, and it was a real pleasure to have you guys on the show, and I know I'm cutting into serious fishing time right now. So has the season started for you guys? No. Not yet.
Pretty soon.
Pretty soon?
Yeah.
So cool. Who's the first school to go out?
Who's the first school?
I can't remember.
Can't remember?
And I'll blank that out of my memory for now.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll deal with that at the time.
Well, I'm sure there are kids eagerly awaiting their first fishing
Nature
trip.
Mania, that's it.
Nature Mania.
New York Restoration Project, that's the first one.
Awesome, yeah, well awesome. Done, yeah. There we go. The man on the stats. Yeah. Thanks, guys, so much for coming on. You heard it here. Catch it, cook it, and eat it. Snake Eyes.